This is Bob Wilson here on Don't Pass Me By. We are on the Shake and Wake Network. Today we are on the road to a really good show, largely in part to our guests, Carol Shaw and Don Jeffries. Carol Shaw has a new book. It's out on Bear Manor Media with Ben Omart and his company over there that everybody loves so much. She's got a new book called Bob Hope's Bungalow, Tales from the Typing Trenches. And our buddy Don Jeffries, you all know, he's a well-known podcaster. He's had his radio shows. He has the Hidden History series of books, Bullyocracy, Survival of the Richest, and his Hollywood expose on Borrowed Fame. So welcome, you two crazy kids.
Hey, how are you doing?
Glad to be here.
It is good to have you here. So, Carol, there was an amazing thing in the book there. You have a talent that started this whole hoopla. You can type 110 words per minute?
Yeah, I think it was 120 at my peak. I was known as Flying Fingers Shaw.
Flying Fingers, yeah. 120 words per minute. That is massively impressive.
Yeah, now, I used to work for a law firm, so everything is like, give it to me now. I want it now. Type it up now. So you got really fast at it.
Did you look at the keys? Like, when I type, I have to look at the keys. Did you just do it from? You didn't even have to look at the keys. Oh, and you had 120 words per minute. How did 100?
The keys, you slowed down. If you look down at the keys, no.
Well, if I don't look, I don't know where they are. So then I can't win either way. But how did 120 words per minute land Carol Shaw on the road to Toluca Lake?
Well, it's funny. I started out as a legal secretary, and I had worked at the law firm in Minneapolis, Fagery & Benson, for 4 years. And I said, there's got to be something more interesting than typing up all these legal documents. Although I did love the job. It was a great job. But I was bored. So a friend of mine, we got in our cars. We decided we're going to go over there in January. What was it, 1975, we got in our cars, we drove all the way to Los Angeles. We got there on my birthday in 76. It was towards the end of 1975.
So, well, okay, the time wait, we got there, you said it was your birthday. What was the date? What's your birthday?
January 24th.
We needed to know that. Remember, you're under oath. I'm sorry. Continue with your story.
I know. Oh, my gosh. So anyway, so I get there, and there's all these temp jobs at that time. So you had you were kind of like, you were picking and choosing the jobs because there were so many jobs, and there were so many temp jobs. And I ended up at a law firm downtown, worked for a wonderful person, decided to go back to get my degree. And after I was almost finished with the degree at Cal State Northridge in Northridge, California, I decided I need a break. Just before, I had like a month to go, but I needed a break. So I saw this ad in the paper for Must Have a Sense of Humor was the title. And what I did was I applied for it and went over, and it was for Bob Hope. It was just amazing. It's kind of a secret of mission that I was sent on. You can't tell anybody. We're not telling you where who the person is you're going to, work for. But here's the address, and just show up.
So you showed up, and as fate would have it, Bob Hope was the person you would be working for. How cool is that? Now,
cool.
Am I correct that that you would be secretary number two?
I was number two.
Now, could you explain to us the difference between secretary number one for Bob Hope and secretary number two? And then I have a further follow-up secretarial question after number two.
Well, secretary number one came in later and worked into the night with him. She was like his, secondhand person. And I was, I typed the jokes, as the writers would call in the jokes. She did too, but her main thing was to type up all the letters. Bob dictated letter after letter, and she went to the studios with him that he, went to. But my main thing was the office. It was called the bungalow. And it was just, you drove up the little driveway, and it was this little building off, you know, you couldn't get into the estate because there was a big old gate. You had to go through the bungalow to get in. So that's, we had the bookkeeper, we had the two, there was two receptionists, Mrs. Hope's secretary, and then the two secretaries that worked for Bob, and one other part-time worker. And a host of other people on the estate. I mean, there were so many people running around. Well, I was number two because I think I was the fast typist, and I got along with the dogs, the dreaded dogs. Oh my God.
I was going to, before you go into it, I was going to ask, what, as you were secretary number two, you were replacing someone, Carol. What happened to the person whom you replaced? This is a horrible story. This is like the emergency room.
This one, nobody told me that the dogs were, what should I say, killer.
That's a good description.
They were. She was the secretary that I replaced, I believe, had gone on vacation, came back, and the dogs apparently had forgotten who she was, because when she was alone with the dogs out in the back, they attacked her. I mean, they literally bit into her skin. Into her chest, into her hand. Her hands are what, you know, is your, you got to use your hands to do the typing. So long story short, she went to the hospital and had to have surgery on her hand, which, you know, never worked correctly again. And should I tell you this other part of it? I don't know if I should.
Yeah, we don't want to make a long story short. We want the details. We want all the gory details of the dog attacks at Bob Hope's home. Oh, what happened?
God. Okay, so I don't know. I think everybody knows. Back in the old days, I mean, he was from the vaudevillian times, and back in the old days, they went through the Depression, and they, you know, everything was, we got to save, you know, a nickel here, a penny there. So he was kind of cheap. I mean, he's known to be cheap. So anyway, he didn't.
And he wound up being worth $150 million, I just looked up.
Yeah, that's because he saved every nickel and dime. But anyway,
oh, you lucky boy.
he didn't want to pay for her hospital stay. So I'll have a big fight about that.
So his dogs tore her apart. Bitter hand, bitter in other places, and he didn't want to pony up? This is terrible.
No, she worked for the famous Bob Hope, so why should she complain? So she loses a hand. Who cares?
What's a little dog attacking, old friend?
Long story short, she got the money from him, opened up a gift shop in Hawaii, and has lived there for the rest of her life, I guess. So she made out okay, let's put it that way.
Well,
I knew none of this when I did the interview with the office manager. I had no clue what I was stepping into. I just thought it would be, you know, lollipops and sunshine and a lot of jokes.
Now, at what point, Carol Shaw, did you discover that these dog attacks had happened, and did you yourself have any run-ins with Bob Hope's dogs? This sounds like the Stephen King novel Cujo. Remember your dogs.
Yes, they were. Yes, they definitely were. So I didn't know anything, and Marie was the like the receptionist at the front. She was so deadpan. She was dry. Her humor was, she'd say something, she wouldn't crack a smile, and you'd had to do a double take because, was that a joke? Was she kidding? But she would say these things, and I'd be going, oh, she's telling the truth there. And she said, yeah, the other secretary, you know, she, you know, went to the hospital, and that's why you're working here.
Good Lord.
I couldn't believe it. And I said, you mean the dogs are vicious dogs? She'd be, I wouldn't trust them. Don't go out there by yourself. Well, of course, that's the first thing I did. I was taking a break. I thought I'd go out the back. Nobody was around. No dogs, nothing. There was a chair. I'm sitting in the chair. And I'm leaning back and getting some rays. And I'm thinking, oh, this is great back here. I've got 5 minutes. I'll go back in. So I open my eyes. Both dogs are looking at me.
Oh, my goodness.
You couldn't believe my heart was pounding. It was racing.
Mine is racing just hearing your accounting of this. Terrible.
I'm thinking, are they growling? what are they doing? One was called Shadow because he was all black, and one was Snowjaw, but he was the white dog, all white. And they're looking at me like, that's a tasty morsel.
Oh, my goodness.
They're used to blood, you know that. So I kind of got up and backed away praying they wouldn't come after me. But they did.
Well, I hope your prayers were answered in a good way.
They were. I was, oh, my God, I was almost in tears. So I got in and I saw Armando. He was the, he actually chauffeured, he wasn't a chauffeur, but he was the handyman, they called him. And he took Bob everywhere. Anyway, but so
wasn't that a Sammy Davis song, The Handyman? The Handyman. I'm sorry.
Like candy.
Just ignore me. There you go.
But anyway, so I got inside and Armando, what's wrong? Why are you shaking? Why are you so white? I said, oh, the dog. I'm almost in tears. And he goes, you want a drink? I said, give me a drink.
You need a drink.
So I go and sit. So I go and sit down at my desk. And guess who's underneath the desk? The dogs.
The same dogs?
Dogs.
Or more dogs? How many dogs were at this place?
Same dog. Oh, my God. As soon as I pulled the chair out, they both flew out from underneath my desk. And I was like, oh, I need a Valium.
At least.
That was my introduction to the dog. It's like, oh, my God.
So thank God they never bit you.
They never bit me at all, but I saw them in action in the bungalow. They were biting the riders. Well, they would bite their butt.
What was that when they had another jokes writer, so far that he would Bob Hope would order them to attack? You said,
"You better give us good material, boys, or you're gonna end up in the dog food bowl."
Wow!
But I had many days. Cause I worked for him for about 13 months, and I was dreaming about those dogs all the time. I wake up in a cold sweat thinking. A dog.
I don't blame you.
But anyway, so that was my introduction to the dogs.
We know about the dogs. Now let me ask about the wife. Dolores Hope. Now she was in, they were on the upper echelons of the floor. They were the royalty and you guys were, you guys were the servants.
We were the outhouse in the back. It wasn't an outhouse. It was the bungalow back there. But they were up in the mansion part, it was very luxurious. Even though it was the old days, I mean, they didn't really have it up to date like they do now. They did a whole big remodel of the place, but she ruled the roost. I mean, she was definitely was in charge.
Would you rather face Dolores or Shadow? And what was the other one? Snow Cone? Who would you rather face?
Snow Job.
Sorry. I thought that was a Bond villain. No, that was Odd Job. I'm sorry.
No job.
But
anyway, you kind of gave her a wide berth.
Did she have rules about the women who worked for Bob?
You could not call him Bob. That was a no-no. If you called him Bob, you were out. It was Mr. Hope. So I always referred to him as Mr. Hope. Even today, I still call him Mr. Hope.
He instilled that with the dog fear. Now, his actual name, I didn't know until today. I looked it up, and his real name was Leslie Towns Hope.
And you know why he changed it? He thought it was too not silly. What's the word? It wasn't
like
masculine enough. He wanted to be masculine because he came from England, and they settled in Cleveland. He took up boxing. And,
he took up boxing. I didn't know that either.
Yeah, I was a boxer in Cleveland.
Did he tell you any stories?
I don't think so.
Was he any good?
I wasn't around at the time. I don't know.
Or did he bet against himself?
He was fair to middling. I don't know. But
that's
that
tomorrow's
was
weather.
And then he got into vaudeville.
Now. When he was in vaudeville, obviously he became a hit if he made it to the movies. What can you tell us about his vaudeville days?
He was
better than his boxing career, I hope.
Yeah, it was. But
did he use the dogs in the act? Snowball and Shadow?
No,
why not?
No dogs in the act. No. But he did. He had a partner called Louise Troxell, and he married her. I think they lasted about a year.
And you lasted 13 months as a secretary. He's not having a good track record. Dog attacks and people are leaving him quickly.
Well, this isn't early days. Don't forget. We're talking probably he was born in, 1903? So we're probably talking 23, 25, something like that, that he met his first wife.
And later for her, she's gone 12 months later. Now, he was from England, he dropped. So he became basically Mr. USO serving the American military with all these shows.
My God.
So I would have thought he was born in Cleveland or something, but he was born in England. That's kind of shocking.
It is. And he was very Americanized. I was trying to remember where he was actually born. Oh, Eltham, E-L-T-H-A-M, Eltham. England has so many little towns. They're all small. My mother came from England, so she had a. There are a lot of strange names that were the English picked for the names of their towns.
I concur with your assessment of English towns. Now, Bob Hope also had children, but I never knew until today. As I read your book this week, and I looked up also the Wikipedia page to try and bolster my Bob Hope knowledge, that his four children were adopted. This I did not know.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I believe they went back to Cleveland, and they adopted the children. Not all at once. They did it in stages, apparently. They're all adopted.
And he adopted them. It seems they were all teenagers. He didn't adopt little babies. He adopted like 30-year-old men. No, he adopted like 14-year-old children.
No, I don't think they were that old.
No, it said today. It said today they were like about 13.
Yeah, well, you know, I wasn't there. I mean, I can only relate, you know, and tell you what.
Remember, you're under oath. If we find out you were there, it'll be big trouble. We'll have Ben Omar to Bear Manor Media come down.
All I know is one lived across the street from his home, and the others, one had died, and the other two, I'm not quite sure what happened to them. But
one was a lawyer, it said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they could defend you if Ben Omar comes after you for lying under oath on the show.
Yeah, you're gonna break an arm. But anyway, they kept to themselves. They rarely came over that I saw. I worked there at when did I start at 9 o'clock till 5. I barely saw them. If they came in, they came in through that gate that opens up. The guard had to release the gate so it creaked open and they could drive up the driveway further in, park at the bottom of the mansion.
Well, that's a good question. That could be scandalous. Did they like him?
Oh, absolutely. Are you kidding?
Oh, they did. Okay. I was hoping you'd say no, because it's more interesting if you said no.
You were thinking of Crawford's dog.
Did the dogs bother them?
I think they did, because whenever they would go up to the house, either Dolores would come out or Bob would come out to meet them. So the dogs, no, they never touched them. Are you kidding?
Now, Bob was famous and synonymous for many things, but among these things was the Academy Awards. And he hosted these Academy Awards back in the day when there were still great shows. So can you tell us,
he had a record of 19 times hosting that show.
Well, that's when the show was really good. I mean, I would rather go back and watch those than watch the current ones that they do.
Well, yeah, they were fun.
Now, what about the this Academy Award that Bob got that says they gave him a 1966 honorary award? And I read in your excellent tome, Bob Hope's Bungalow, Tales from the Typing Trenches, that there was some type of award in his den, was it? Could you tell us?
Yeah, but let me tell you. The den was part of the bungalow, and it was dark in there. You open up the door, you go in, there's this desk, all the memorabilia. You would see there were machine guns up on the top shelf, which I thought, aren't they?
Was this Bob Hope or Elvis?
No, it was Bob Hope. And then in the corner, there was the
machine
statue.
Guns. Wait a minute, I have to stop you. He had wild, vicious dogs and machine guns. This is Bob Hope of the Road movies.
I know.
And you're telling me he's a boxer? Is this a different Bob Hope? That
let me explain one little thing about that whole thing. He had an agent. Now I'm not going to say that this is true or not, but
he was mobbed up, wasn't he?
No, I got the scuttlebutt from Marie. I blame her on everything. She's the mouth that roared. But anyway, she would say, you know, he's a kind of in with the Italians, you know. And I said, what, the mob? And she's nodding her head. And I'm like, the mob? What?
Oh, my goodness.
Believe it.
The road to Sicily.
I'm telling you. And she said, oh,
well, the road to Sicily, Iceland, I don't know. What was there? No, did the scuttlebutt go any deeper? Because this is interesting.
What did
Bob do with machine guns, dogs, and the mafia? Sounds like Lawyers, Guns, and Money by Warren Zevon.
Oh my God.
What was he doing with this stuff?
He was telling Joe. He had.
Did he have been killed?
He had the public persona of. You know, I love America. Everything is, you know, wonderful. The military is great. And then the other side was more smokers, where he would tell, you know, the dirty jokes. Every night, and this went on well beyond before I started, after I started, he would fly out every night on a private plane owned by a billionaire, a friend of his, and he'd go to these smokers and he would, you know, you know what a smoker is.
Well, they would get together at a men's club. He'd tell off-color
men's
jokes.
Men's club. Yeah.
They'd get loaded.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if he got loaded, but he was.
Well, they got loaded. Somebody got loaded.
Somebody got loaded.
Machine guns were loaded.
And he would be, you know, there were two kinds of jokes. I mean, you had to be careful you didn't mix them up, God forbid. But anyway.
Or offend the Italians.
Yeah. Very. But anyway, I think his wife was Italian. Dolores was Italian because Defina, that was her last name, her maiden name. She was Italian. She was so tight. She really wanted to meet the Pope, and she did. She got blessed by the Pope.
I wanted the smokers?
No. No.
What was the Pope doing at the smokers with the mafia? I had to call Bing in and ask him what was going on here. So did she get to meet the Pope?
She met the Pope, her and her sister.
Maybe the mafia arranged that.
Probably, who knows?
They're all in Italy.
Yeah, but she was in tight with the Pope, you know. That's why she lived to 102.
In with the Pope, she lived to 102. We had machine guns and wild dogs at Bob Hope's house.
It's
done.
It's an expose. Oh, God. It was fun, though. It was a really good job.
Wow. Now, and I just wanted to mention in 1955, my dear close personal friend Peggy King, star of screen, stage, and records, she came on the show with Bob, and she had told me that Bob was really kind to her, that she was, you know, a newbie, and that he was very nice to her, and that from backstage she had to walk in those, you know, women's heels, you know, that are so hard to walk in when I put them on. Mm-hmm. And she had to walk up a plank to get to the stage and these things, and she almost fell, and she got over to Bob, and she came out, and she sang, "Count Your Blessings Instead of Sheep." And she also went on a USO tour to Alaska with Bob. What about the USO tours in Bob Hope? What can you tell us about those?
He didn't do one when I was there, but he did a ton of them. Like I said, he was really, really into the military. They would write or call in, they called in and actually wanted memorabilia that they could auction off. And they sent, you know, the lieutenants or the sergeants or whatever to pick it up. And this is a day when everybody had those crazy perms. You remember the perm that, you know, ate Cleveland? The huge, huge, curly-haired perms of the
early. That's the one that I'm just growing out now.
You could have written for him. You're funny.
Hey, if he had a hunch, if he paid better.
No, he didn't pay. My salary was like $330 a week, which is not much, you know. Coming from a law firm, I'm going, oh, not very much.
Well, it's hard to ask a guy for a raise with dogs, the mafia, the military.
No, right. You should be glad that you just worked and, you know, kneeled in front of Bob. And he was really a normal.
Did you have to kiss his ring like the Pope?
Oh, I always kiss his ring. No, but he was always, always very cordial, very charming. He never got mad at me, thank the Lord. And in fact,
amen. I'm glad, thank the Lord, too. I didn't want him mad at me. I mean, mafia guy's coming up with no
way. Coming after me, no way.
I concur with your assessment.
But I was always, you know, I was kind of imitating him, and he'd always say, I think you're imitating me. Oh, no, not me. I kind of picked up the joke, the rhythm of the jokes, you know.
Well, it sounds like it was a fun place to work, but I'd be afraid to ask for a raise under that atmosphere.
Yeah, there was no, forget about getting a raise. The secretary that was his secretary worked so hard for him that she eventually got ill. I mean, she was there like all the time, you know, worked, you know, Saturdays, Sundays, no pay for that, forget it. And
he didn't
really,
pay
he worked
for
her
that.
To death.
You wouldn't get paid for those days?
No, are you crazy?
Oh, no. My goodness. Are you sure this wasn't Jack Benny?
I think he took his cue from Jack Benny.
Wow.
Oh, God. Yeah. But they were all, you know, it was a really fun time. I didn't have to do all that extra work, thank God, that she did. But it broke her down. So she eventually, you know, just called in and said she was sick. And they said, well, you know, we need someone here all the time, meaning 24/7. So anyway, they apparently said we need someone who's going to be there. And she never came back, and I was the only one there, and I'm sweating bullets.
Was she ever heard from again?
7 days a week. What?
She never came back. Was she, with all these people running around, was she ever heard from again?
Oh, no.
I'm just checking.
I'm wondering if Guido got her. I don't
know. Yeah, I mean, goodness gracious.
I have to tell you this one thing. The one story was, oh my God, Mark was the agent. And Marie called over to me. She's in the front. And she says, Mark's on his way in with two guys. And I'm going, okay, so big deal. In comes Mark. Mark's the small guy in the middle. And next to him are these two burly, they look like Dwayne Johnson, The Rock.
Oh my God.
Italian looking, you know, no neck. And I'm thinking, oh my God, Marie was right.
Luca Brasi and company.
Oh my God, it was scary. But yeah. Mark was fun though. He was pretty normal. He was an agent. You know, he had that agent mentality. Book on here, Dano.
There you go.
Anyway.
Now, you know who we have coming up now? He's the author of the Hidden History series, Bullyocracy, Survival of the Richest, On Borrowed Fame, and a new Beatle book he and I have coming out soon. Of course, I speak of the great, well-known writer and orator and writer of great columns, Don Jeffries. Don, you know classic Hollywood like the back of your hand. So
oh,
can you
gosh.
Please take over and lead us into more Bob Hope stories?
Well, I appreciate that humble introduction, Bob. Thank you. And but you're a tough act to follow. I'm listening to this, and man, you've got Carol rolling in the aisles here. So first thing I'm going to ask you, Carol, is that you're obviously a receptive audience. Did Bob Hope ever try out his material on you? Because I mean, he had to have been pleased, I guess. And Bob wasn't probably funnier than Bob Hope was. But I mean, did he ever test anything out on you?
He didn't test out. Most of his jokes are written by the writers. It was Bob Hope esque kind of jokes. There was all it was all his style. And so the writers would, you know, they'd call in 20 jokes. There were 10 writers, give or take, you know, and there were people that actually were writers that weren't on staff, and they'd call in 10 jokes. They weren't even paid for their work. But so I would type up these jokes, and I would be cracking up because they were hysterical. And the one time I didn't laugh at a joke, I think it was Bob Mills. Robert Mills, I called him in the book. So I was trying to, you know, make sure that Robert and Bob were two separate entities. So I was getting confused. Bob here, Bob there. And, you know, Bob is a popular name. So anyway, so Robert Mills, he's dictating the joke. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, that's kind of cute. But I didn't laugh. Usually I laugh. And he goes, you're not laughing. And I'm like, yeah, it was a cute joke. And he says, but you didn't laugh. Well, it was cute. And he said, throw it out. I'm going to give you another one. From that moment on, I knew I had to laugh.
Well, you're obviously a good audience. I can say that. I did a couple of open mic comedy things way back in the day, you know, and if I ever do it again, I'm going to have to look you up, because I would I would like to
have you a plant in the audience.
Exactly. Well, just, you know, someone was you know, I don't, you remember that show with
Get the Ball Laugh Rolling. I always laugh at stuff, you know. It's really fun.
Well, yeah, and that's great. It's great to do. Laughter is the best medicine, as they say.
Yeah. Oh, but if I didn't laugh at a Bob, even if Bob said something funny, you know, he'd give you that look like, you get that one? And you start laughing.
Right.
Just
so
the look alone made me laugh.
Well, there's kind of a shocking introduction to Bob Hope, or I guess the first time you saw him, he's 80 years old, and he's dressed in obscenely tight underwear.
I stood there myself, and I was like frozen, thinking to myself, I've never met Bob Hope, a movie star, you know, great comedian, but he's cutting the hum of nothing on. God, because I came from working with lawyers, and you know, they're in 3-piece suits, and they're, you know, this and that. And Bob Hope is like, well, here I am. Like, oh my God. What do you say to that? You can't say anything. I was like, my mouth was open. That's all I could say.
Well, Bob, I think, must have had a good physique when he was young, because I did know he had been a boxer. I think he boxed under the ring name Paddy, Paddy McShay or some Irish name. And I think he had a pretty good record, if I remember right. So you didn't see any signs like he didn't like. He wasn't punching his...
He wasn't flexing his muscles, like that, let's put it that way. He was leaning more on the golf club. He used to love to come out and play that, you know, three-putt golf hole, because he had a hard time putting. Let's put it that way. But that was kind of fun to watch. And then he couldn't figure out how to work a car, a brand new car. He was delivered by Chrysler every year.
You described him, I guess, as he was kind of a stereotypically crazy old driver. He was just like zigzagging out.
If you had heard Armando was the most sweetest, kindest, wonderful person I've ever met. I mean, you couldn't help but fall in love with him. He was just adorable. But he said every time he had to fight to drive him, because Bob wanted to drive. Bob couldn't see very well because he had this eye problem in his 80s. And it wasn't, you know, his eyesight was going. So anyway, he could hardly see. And, you know, the cops in, Toluca Lake gave him a wide berth, because who wants to arrest Bob Hope, you know, have that on their record? No way. So they let him drive, but he was dangerous. I mean, Armando was always doing the sign of the cross and praying. Nothing would happen. But
did he get in any accidents at all?
Yes, he did. Oh my God. Okay. They were little ones, but you know, Armando. Yeah. I think Armando took the blame.
Yeah.
Oh, I was driving. It wasn't Bob, no. That was meant to Marie Callender's.
So you're just reading, you know, that your experiences there. So generally speaking, you describe Bob Hope as pleasant. So he was a good boss in your mind?
I think so. And I got to tell you, he loved Armando, too. So when Armando finally retired, he gave him a huge party. This is unheard of from Bob, you know, gave him a huge party and gave him a wonderful going away gift of cash money. So Armando was thrilled. You know, he worked for him for years. Bob loved him.
Cool.
There's no question.
Well, and you describe him as parsimonious, to put it kindly. And you know, there are a lot of the people in Hollywood. I mean, Fred McMurray was a notorious tightwad. Cary Grant, one of my favorites was. So Bob Hope, I guess, was maybe more people than not out there were. So
there probably were, yeah.
Did he pay you well? Did he give you a Christmas bonus or anything like that?
The bonus? Oh, my God. Do not make me laugh. A bonus. Here's what we got for Christmas. And I have a copy of it. I can't find it. It was a clock. It was made out of plastic.
Okay.
The guy, Ward Grant, he comes into the office. He says, can you sign for Bob Hope? Because, you know, Bob's not around. But I need someone to, you know, sign his name on the... That's a little plastic clock. And I'm going, what's this, our Christmas present? He goes, well, actually it is. No turkey? The studios give you a turkey.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I signed Bob's name to it. And there was the whole thing about the signature. I got really
What about the signature? I think Bob Wilson, I know, so he's thinking, hopefully, he wants to believe that it was actually Bob Hope. What was the ratio? Yeah. How many of the autograph requests that were sent to him in the mail, how many of those did he actually sign himself, percentage-wise?
I would say he signed a lot of the celebrity, you know, people in the business, or, you know, people that he knew. Nixon wanted it. Even Dorothy L'Amour, you know, she called me up. She called up the office and she goes, I got her on the phone and she goes, I really have a crazy question to ask you. Is there any way can I get a, you know, an autograph? And I said, you want an autograph? Weren't you the wrong girl?
Yeah, I found that.
I never, ever got an autograph. So
That was kind of bizarre. Because I mean, wouldn't
I know it was really kind of funny. I guess because she was getting older and he was 80. She probably, who knows why she wanted an autograph, but it was, you know, like going to Fort Knox to get him to sign something. But for her, yeah, absolutely, signed it immediately. He laughed about it. He thought it was kind of funny.
Yeah,
it was really.
It's kind of cool. Well, as a
we made a special trip upstairs for him to actually sign it. Couldn't believe it. But my signature was almost as good as his signature. I told you the bookkeeper. The book says that the bookkeeper said, "You signed just like him. There's no telling." He was really a little upset about that.
Well,
don't let her near the checkbook.
There you go. Yeah, you could have made out like a bandit. But I don't know if you.
I'd have to fight Fran for it because she was the bookkeeper. She was a very large woman. No way.
Now, you were there in '83, right? So that was right when SCTV was still pretty popular and one of my favorite shows. I don't know if you ever did you see Dave Thomas's impersonation of Bob Hope?
I did, and I thought he was great. He sounded like him. He had that little twang to his voice. He gave the look when he did the, you know, the I don't know, it wasn't a monologue, but he was telling stories just like Bob did, and I can see the similarities there. It's really, really funny. I've seen him before.
The story goes that Bob Hope, I think he met Bob Hope or Bob Hope called him or something regarding that, and he liked it. Do you know anything about that, what Bob thought? Because he's the first person I ever saw imitate Bob Hope.
Oh, no. I never heard that story, but, you know, Bob Hope was a real big supporter of his fellow comedians. I mean, he really enjoyed the new talent that was coming up. So I'm sure he was, you know, on the bandwagon about that. He loved new comedians.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I thought that. And again, you were there for a year, so I don't know. And you came along after, I think Ben Crosby died in 77 or something. So that was after, obviously we were there after that. But did he talk about him very much? I mean, they were not only acting buddies and all the road pictures, but I think they were pretty close friends. Did his name ever come up?
Oh, no. They were close when they were acting together, but it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't, for instance, it wasn't like Steve Martin and Martin Short. No, I mean, they're close.
Oh, okay.
Nothing like that. Never saw any indication that he was best friends with him. In fact, I had asked about it, and it really, no, it was just a professional relationship. Bing was a little strict. I don't know if you remember the story.
Well,
he was very strict with his daughter.
I don't know about the daughter, but that's what I was going to bring up. And I wondered if that, and because, you know, when Joan Crawford's daughter wrote Mommy Dearest, Betty Davis and a lot of the old people in Hollywood came to her defense and said, that's ridiculous. She's exaggerating and making it up. But
I interrupt only one time, Don Jeffries, only one time. But she used to borrow Bob's dogs to terrorize her children. Back to Don Jeffries.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, and before we get to Ben Crosby, get off SCTV. I understand from a little birdie just told me that you met John Candy. Is that true?
Oh yeah, I worked at later after Bob. I had got a job. I worked at Columbia and I worked at Disney, and I got this job. It was a small animation company called Deke. Deke Animation,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
John Candy was playing, you know, they did the animation for Camp Candy, and
Camp
John Candy
yes.
was the boy. So Camp Candy was, it was the TV show, the animated TV show.
Right.
And I even got a still, you know, they were throwing the still away, and I'm going, can I keep this? I mean, it's a great, you know, thing of Camp Candy, and mm-hmm. John Candy's in there, and it's perfect. Oh, well, there's a little dent there. I don't care. I'll take it. It was in the garbage bin. I took it, and I still have it. It was great. But he was very, very cordial, very nice. You know, you know, the Canadians are very, very sweet people.
Well, his reputation.
I am one myself.
Well, he had one of the best reputations in Hollywood. I mean, he was considered one of the nicest guys.
Very nice and very, very kind. I mean, he was a giant man. Let's put it back. He was very tall.
Yeah.
Like a Michelin man. But, he was really, really, he wasn't, you know, I thought he would be funnier, but he was kind of calm. And, you know, he wasn't, you know, running around like, you know, comedians do.
Well, you mentioned Steve Martin. You know, he has the reputation of being really dull and not very friendly off screen. Like you say, he's not funny at all in real life. It's hard to believe, but because you mentioned him and
that's hard
Martin
to believe.
Because for years he had a routine that everybody, and it really disappointed me. I was a huge fan of Steve Martin, but supposedly he had a gimmick where people would walk up to him and ask for his autograph, and he had these cards printed out. And he would just hand him a card without even saying hello, and just said something like, "Hi, you've met Steve Martin," or something like that. And
oh my God!
You know, so it was kind of gimmicky, but
that's kind of sad to hear. But
it was. It's too bad. Yeah. But John Candy had.
I mean, you have to. You have to be. You need your fans, so you have to be cordial. That's the way I look at it. But you know, sometimes fans can overwhelm you.
Well, what sense did you get from? Well, actually, I brought up the Bing Crosby thing, and then I kind of left it. I just wanted to say that, like, his sons, Gary Crosby, and I think at least two of his sons committed suicide. Maybe three, but at least two. And they all came up. I think three of the four had terrible things to say about him, that he beat them a lot. You know, very, very,
he
very
did
strict.
I heard that he did do that. He is very strict. Bing is very, yeah, very strict. Was he Catholic, too? You know, Catholic.
No, I don't think.
Was
no,
the Pope Catholic?
No, he played a priest many times, and he was convincing at it, but I think he was actually Protestant in real life. But he made a good priest on Spencer Tracy. No, Tracy was a Catholic. But so I just wondered. I wonder if maybe that. And again, I'm sure Bob Hope didn't sit around and gossip with you. Hey, you know what I think about, you know, Ben Crosby? But thought maybe, you know, when those books came out, maybe Bob or some of his friends had a reaction to it, like Joan Crawford's old acting friends did to her. I guess you didn't.
I think he more or less protected the memory of Bing. You know, guys, they all kind of stick together, especially Bob. He was very, you know, he was very tight with his writers, and if, you know, he thought something was going on, he covered for them like nobody's business. No, I'm sure he was very closed mouth about Bing.
Well, so you're there for a year. Did you ever? Yeah. Did he ever break the wall between you two? That you were just saying. I'm not saying, you know, this 80-year-old guy in his tight underwear hitting on you or anything. But I mean, did he ever like break the wall at all? Like to be sociable with you, like to talk personally to you? Did he ever invite you to any social gathering? Like, did they ever parties or anything like that?
They had parties, but don't forget the wife was there, and she was adamant. He was not going to socialize with any secretary. That's why we had to call him Mr. Hope, not Bob. He was cordial to me. I was like 50 years younger than him. And everybody else in the place was, they were 20 years older than me, give or take. And I had a good relationship with him. I slipped under the wire.
Well, you described that, you know, basically that you could have been a hot number in the office, except you had the bad.
No, right? Not with that hair. Not with that. There's no way. I mean, people would go, "Oh my God, what happened to you?" I just washed my hair. Shut up.
Well, speaking of Bob's irrationally jealous wife, did you have any encounters with her? I mean, how was she other than, you know, being what sounds like, you know, deluded about being jealous of this 80-year-old guy?
Well, I don't think she was jealous. You just knew that she was the top dog in that house. She didn't take crap from anybody. She was very, very, what's the word? She was rough. I mean, even her secretary, she had her secretary in tears. I mean, that's how tough it was. And if I saw her coming, hey, I got to go to the bathroom. I'm out of here. Or I pick up the phone, pretend I'm talking to somebody.
So she was, I guess, the boss in the relationship. It sounds like she,
she was pretty, but she was fine with him. I mean, she didn't try to, you know, tell him what to do because she was very strong-willed too. But in the context of everything, she ran the place, you know, and he let her. So, you know, it worked out. I just didn't want to get in her way. Let's put it that way. And I was always in the wrong place at the wrong time doing something I shouldn't have been doing. But anyway,
so you leave.
I slipped under the radar.
Well, you leave in 83, 84, whatever it was, and he lives to be 100. So that means he's got, you know, 19 years or whatever left.
I'm shocked.
Yeah,
but, you know, he didn't pay. I mean, you cannot go on without getting a raise. You need to make some money. You work
well,
for the richest man in California.
Well, you weren't volunteering. He paid you something. I mean, he just was very cheap. He didn't pay you much.
Yeah, it was just $3.30 a week. I mean, that was fine at the time. You know, things have changed dramatically. But I just wanted to make more money and get more. I wanted to get a title or something. You know, I just wanted to move up the, you know, employment ladder. I wanted to be, and I did. I got a job as a manager. Yay, finally got a job.
Well, that's probably, Well, it probably looks good on your resume that you were Bob Hope's secretary, I would imagine.
I put that on my resume for about 6 months. And then I found out that every time I was called in for an interview, that's all they wanted to talk about. What was Bob like? Oh. Tell me about Bob. And then I never got a call back. They just wanted to hear the story. In fact, one production company, this woman says, well, we only invited you because we wanted to hear all about Bob Hope. And there it is. They told me the truth. It's like, okay.
Well, you don't, unless I missed something, you know, going through your book, you don't have anything really scandalous to say other than, you know, when you first met him. I mean, that's kind of a picture you don't really want in your head of Bob Hope in his tight underwear at 8 years old. And, I don't really want to try to picture that. But,
I saw was the leg in the car. Oh my God. Why is that? I mentioned that in the book. It's like the guard, you know, it was at night. And the guard was like, come over here. Gotta see this. And Bob's in the car. And you think he's alone? Sure. There's nobody there. There's nobody sitting next to him. And the guard goes, you know, he's trying to fumble and get the gate open. And he's saying to me, the guard's saying, look at the other passenger seat at the bottom. There's a woman. I'm going, what? There's a woman. So I had to, you know... I looked over and I saw the leg. I was like, oh, my God, he's sneaking a woman in there. And the guard, you know, he said, well, he's done it before. No, you're kidding me.
So how did he do this with Dolores around? I mean, she's watching everything.
I do believe Dolores wasn't around that weekend. I think she was with the Pope. He times it perfectly, you know.
Yeah. So, Carol, where can people find your book? Tell us about it again. Give the title again. What's the best place? Where can they get the best deal or anything else you want to promote?
Okay, so I would say the book is called Bob Hope's Bungalow, Tales from the Typing Trenches by Carol Shaw, and it's available. The easiest way, there's the hardcover, softcover, you can download it to your Kindle, in fact, at Amazon.com, or you can order from BearManorMedia.com. And sometimes there are sales there. It all depends. And then also BarnesandNobles.com. At any bookstore, you request the book, they'll ship it to the bookstore, and there it is. If you want an autographed postcard or what do you call it, a book, bookmark, I can send you a bookmark, the cover essentially and the back of the book, but
because Bear Manor published on Barnes Fame for me, so I'm familiar with the 5,000 postcards or whatever.
Yeah, you are they weigh a ton.
I try to figure out what to do with them all the time. It's like I just hand out people's stacks. I go, I get 5,000 of these.
I didn't realize how many you get. And then I'm thinking, maybe I should be putting these on car windshields in every parking lot.
Pretty much.
Well, we still have a minute, you two crazy kids. We're at Don't Pass Me By on the Shake and Wake Network with our producer, Steve Roberts, Don Jeffries, and Carol Shaw. I have an idea. Why don't we close the show by singing Bob's old song together, Thanks for the Memory?
Sure, sounds good.
Thanks for the memory. The sentimental. Nothing in my brain.
I know the words. Thanks for the memory. Well,
Carol, you sing us out. Carol, sing it for us.
Thanks for the memory. What's that word?
Sentimental verse.
Nothing in my purse. And thanks.
And chuckles. Yeah.
I can't go on. I can't sing.
Oh, brother.
I sang to him, and he laughed his head off.
Yeah.
You were in tune, Miss Shaw.
Well, in any event, I thank you two for the memories. That was a memorable one to me. Thank you, Don Jeffries. Thank you, Carol Shaw. Thank you, Steve Roberts. And we'll have to have you come back if you would like to. And Don Jeffries has a show he can invite you on to.
There you go.
Yeah,
it'd be great.
It was great talking with you, Carol. Wonderful.
I loved it. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Take care.
Take care.